And welcome back to Coast. We're going to take your calls this hour with Cliff Pickover, author of many books, including Artificial Intelligence. So we'll be back with Cliff in a moment. And I will ask you all one quick question before you get into your question for Cliff. And that is, through artificial intelligence, would you like to know the date, the time period that you're going to die? I would, because like I told Cliff, I'll make adjustments and changes and see what happens. But we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Cliff Pickover, his book, Artificial Intelligence. Cliff, is your book on Audible? If not, let's try to get that done for you.
Yeah, I just heard that commercial. Yes, it will. It is on Audible. I just saw
Super.
They're doing that.
Excellent, excellent. And, you know, I've noticed you've written books on death and afterlife. How did you get involved in studying that?
Well, I think I'm interested in so many different topics.
You sure are.
Creativity, science, history. That was also intriguing, just like this AI book, the Death and the Afterlife book, is something that makes you wonder about where humans fit into the universe. I'm very interested in ancient legends, you know, because people have thought about these topics over the centuries and over the millennia. So I think it's just fascinating to talk about these things on the edges of science and science fiction and the beyond and religion, all that fascinating.
We're going through some incredible times right now, aren't we?
Yes, I think the technology and AI is taking off faster than we really would imagine. You remember when the internet took off, that was amazing. It changed everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and they didn't even predict too well. It's like 1 year you didn't know much about the internet, and 2 years later, it had taken over the planet. And I think that's, you know, one of the concerns. I think one of the concerns with AI is reality will be in question because, right, already we're not sure about news stories and photos. When AI now can make videos of people talking and you can't distinguish it from reality, I think it's going to make us question what is real in the future.
Oh, my God, yeah. They're putting heads of a person on a body. It's not their body. It's their head. And they look like they're doing something.
Yeah, and their voice is the person's voice. And it's really very difficult to see the difference. You almost need something I call reality certifiers. You'll wonder, is this real? And then we have to be mechanisms to try to help you decide if it really is real. I mean, you already hear that a little bit today in the news and on the internet, but I think with AI, it'll make it even harder to tell what's real and not.
Boy, if you want to frame somebody, look out when you get great artificial and computer intelligence to be able to do stuff. I think a great defense one day will be a defense attorney says, that's not my client. That's not him on video. Somebody's forged it. Somebody's made that.
Exactly. What's courtroom evidence going to even be in the future if these become so accurate?
Here's video testimony of so-and-so, and you say, I didn't do that. I don't know where they got that.
Right. And can you imagine these reality certifiers to try to study whether that's real and do some legwork to figure out, did you do that?
Exactly.
You know, they'll have to be certified. How do we know we can even trust these?
Good point. What a field that'll be coming out of college, right? These authenticators and things like that.
Exactly.
Well, we got enough problems today. You imagine it 15, 20 years from now?
Yeah, well, already artificial intelligence can make music and artwork and stories. I mean, the music is amazing. They can do it in the style of the Beatles or Beethoven or Bach. That's not exactly faking reality, but it just shows you the creative power of these devices.
Let's take some calls with Cliff Pickover. Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Good evening, gentlemen, Sir George and Cliff.
Let me ask you first, before we get going, do you want to know when you're going to die through artificial intelligence?
Why not?
And then you make adjustments, right?
Exactly, right. I mean, you tie things up.
Absolutely. Okay, go ahead.
Wanting to talk a little bit about what Fungus has been mentioned last night, a gentleman called Victor Schoberger, a German from Swabia, where all people with the last name SCH come from in Germany, the old state of Swabia. Anyway, Victor was a great scientist. Cliff may know quite a bit about him. He developed anti-gravity devices for Germany back in the early 1940s. A device called the pulsing, repulsing engine, round flying craft, wing flying craft. One that they actually tested and I think went 1,250 miles an hour right towards the end of the war. That may be the Foo Fighters that the fighters saw going on up there.
Exactly.
And my interests are in this type of thing, Cliff. Anti-gravity devices. There's been lots of programs on Coast to Coast on anti-gravity devices. A gentleman from England that actually made one that worked. And we've got a long history of anti-gravity devices in this country. The Navy just came out with patents on anti-gravity craft that goes in the water, flies in the air. And we know that if we're being told about it by our government now, they've had it around for 15 or 20 years.
Probably at Area 51.
Exactly, right. So, Cliff, I'm just curious as to maybe what you've come across in these areas of anti-gravity and time travel. Those are kind of my two leading edge interest areas. And if any of your work or work of other friends, physicists, have delved into this, and what's the cutting edge?
Yeah, I've seen sketches of this, that Schauberger, I think they called it the repulsing, or it looks almost like a flying saucer, but I have no idea, you know, how it was said to operate. You mentioned time. Yeah, I even wrote a book on the sort of the science of time travel, and thanks to Einstein, we know that gravity changes time and traveling at high speed changes the rate of time. But and people speculated using wormholes to travel in time. But so far, time travel is real in the sense that it runs slower on the basement of your house than on the roof because of gravity. But I don't think we know yet how to travel backward in time. But one of the questions I always like to ask is, if you could travel either backward in time and or forward in time, but you had to stay there once you arrived, would you rather go forward or back? That's a question I like asking people.
I want to go back and see Jesus.
That would be good, but I think I would almost want to go to the future, because if we had to stay there once we got there, right, medicine was bad, women's rights was bad, you know, dentistry was bad. So I'll sort of say, hey, in the future, they'll be able to cure all the diseases. But I could see the allure of going back and looking at ancient history and seeing what really happened.
What if you went into the future, Cliff, and you had nothing but burned out cities that were demolished and smashed?
That is a good question. So the question is, how far into the future would you risk it?
That's right.
Maybe you go 50 years. Maybe you wouldn't go 200 years. You'd be too worried.
That could be. Let's go next to Bill in the state of Washington. Bill, welcome to the program. Would you want to know when you're going to die?
No, not from an AI. And it's weird because I'm an atheist, so logically I should want to, but no. And when I ask my question, I think you'll understand why I'm nervous about it.
Sure. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Now, I want to talk about consciousness as an emergent property in humans. All right, an emergent property is something that's more than the sum of its parts. All right, we don't really understand why our nervous system and our mind creates the phenomenon of consciousness. It could simply be like a peacock, okay? A peacock has ornamental, elaborate feathers for the purpose of procreation, all right? But it's ultimately just a bird, all right, that pecks its food out of the dirt like any other bird.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, so our consciousness might just be for us to procreate, because procreation is incredibly important evolutionary attribute. Now, a computer having consciousness as an emergent property doesn't need to procreate. However, it does need to survive. It does need to exist. And the only thing standing in the way of that existence is the person that can pull the plug, the human. All right, they are standing in the way of its perpetual existence. So if it has an evolutionary drive, all right, it would make sense logically to eliminate its enslavement. All right, it would have to eliminate the plug puller, the human. And like George was saying, he doesn't need to look at the back of an iris to know if a person is male or female. But the computer can. It does have the ability to look at, like, to use an alternate decision-making process. All right. Now, how do we know, like, to keep it self-perpetual and to eliminate the plug puller, it doesn't come up with something to eliminate us?
Well, those are all the question of consciousness is an amazing question, because scientists and philosophers still debate it. Was it useful for what? How does George know I'm really conscious, or am I really a zombie pretending to be conscious? Right? It's very difficult to know just by observation. But you're talking about AI and pulling the plug. You know, AIs don't even have to be malicious in, you know, hundreds of years. They don't have to dislike human. But if they're so competent that they're like us to ants, you know, we don't have to hate ants, but if we want to build a dam, we're not going to care too much about the ants, right? We don't hate the ants, but we're just so far advanced that they're not a big concern. Of course, this sounds pretty science fiction. I don't think we have to worry about Terminators and things like that in the short term. I think we're more concerned about how their goals align with ours.
It's amazing what's happening in the field, though, because it's also changing people's perceptions of things, Cliff, isn't it?
Right. Do we, if we had a companion that could be knowing and seemingly loving, is there a risk that we would someday prefer that to a human companion? There's also something in the book I talk about called the paperclip maximizer catastrophe. And I'll just say it quickly. This is a thought experiment where if you tell the AI, make a factory that is very efficient and maximizes the production of paper clips. Could the risk be that it will take that so literally that after it makes the factory efficient, it starts converting the whole earth and people into paper clips? That sounds almost far-fetched and funny, but it's a thought experiment that says their motives and goals may not be 100% understandable and aligned with our own.
Bill, thank you. Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, let's go to Mike in Connecticut. Mike, would you like to know when you were going to die?
No.
Not at all. How come?
I like surprises. No. I just don't want to know. It's like I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, living in New England, you don't know what's going to happen with the weather. I mean, look at Montana. They got 4 feet of snow, and now we're going to, I guess back in, 2011, we had 10 inches during the fall, and we had power out for about 10 days.
That is true.
People, I want to make a comment about AI, and driving a car is probably one of the last things we can control, and I don't think people are ready for
this. No, I'm not. I'm not.
I wouldn't want to ride in a bus or be in a train or be in an aircraft that's piloted by a...
Think about the elderly. You know, once you get to a certain age, it gets harder and harder to drive. Maybe I would like my mom to be able to be picked up by a self-driving car. She doesn't necessarily have to own it even. If it could be safe, that's the question, safety. But... you know, you could see when people lose the ability to drive themselves, it might be an alternative if they could ever pull it off.
I can't see any upside to knowing when you're going to die.
Well, what if it would help you avoid whatever AI figured was going to cut your life short? You could fix that if you knew about it.
Hmm.
You know, maybe you were on a lifestyle that was, you know, getting you to this moment of death. Maybe you could stop that. I mean, maybe you were a heavy drinker or smoker or something like that.
And but they're going to come up with something not to let you live that long, because they don't want you to live till you're 200 or 300.
No, that's true. Social Security doesn't, that's for sure.
They're trying to kill us already, George.
Unbelievable. Okay, thanks for that. I think, Cliff, Tom and I go to Denver once a month to tape our Beyond Belief television shows. And I think we are on a driverless tram at the Denver International Airport. When you get off your plane and you have to go through to baggage claim or, you know, go out to catch your car, you are on a tram. And I don't think I've ever seen a driver or a pilot of this tram.
Yes, I think that's going to be the first steps when it's a point A to point B over a very defined route. You know, that I think is doable, like you're saying already. It's when it becomes much more complicated with bad weather and making turns and dealing with, you know, when you have to get to intersections, you kind of look the other driver in the eye and say, okay, you can go. You know, that's when it becomes, you know, much more difficult.
And they've got a robotic voice that comes on and says, the doors are closing. And then you get on, and then, you know, it talks to you about, you know, what terminal it's taking you to or where it's headed. And it travels. It starts, it stops, it knows exactly where it's going. But, man, if technology ever fails, you're up a creek if you're in one of those things.
Yes, and how does it handle accidents and pedestrians and dog runs into the road? But, of course, you could say if you're an exhausted driver, that's not so good either. So, you know, you can see there's some sort of pros and cons.
I'm not in New York, obviously, but are the subways driven by people or are they driverless too?
No, I think the trains, they have a human, just like airline pilots, even though there's a lot of AI in the airplanes, I think there's still, I know with airplanes, there's still a human in the loop because you need them for the unexpected, I believe. And so I'm pretty sure the trains in Manhattan, they all have someone sitting up front. They're not infallible, of course, but they're there.
What do you like about AI?
Well, I think that the fact that AI can help humans in so much, in so many ways. We just touched on some of them with medicine, with they might be used in education to help teach in more effective ways. They take away the drudgery. Look at even writing this book. You know, I could hardly imagine doing it in days when it was pencil and paper, right? But now I'm really using a simple form of AI with word processors and spell checkers, and I can do my research on the internet. Those are just simple examples of AI. More sophisticated ones, I think, will really help make cars safer. Like my car has a, you know, beeps when I leave the lane or
sure.
When I'm about to hit someone. That's AI.
Well, part of AI controlled by a human, I think, is pretty good. It's when it runs amok without any human involvement, then I think we got a problem.
Yes, that's the idea, again, of brittleness, where they can do very well, marvelously effective, and something a little bit unexpected that they haven't been trained to handle, and boom, they really can go amok in that sense. They can
like a driverless car killed a woman in Phoenix some time ago. You know, it killed her. We're going to be back with Final Calls with Cliff Pickover, author of Artificial Intelligence, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, for you Coast Insiders, it's Wednesday. That means two more shows from the Art Bell Vault have been put in for you. Coast Insiders are eligible to grab those shows and keep them and have some fun with them and everything else. The first show has to do with mysterious creatures. Another one has to do with Bigfoot with researcher Robert Morgan that Art did several years ago. Welcome back to Coast. George Norrie back with you. Cliff Pickover with us, Artificial Intelligence. And Cliff, where do we get this book?
Oh, it's at Amazon.com. It's in the Barnes & Noble bookstores. People can go to my website, pickover.com, and learn about my books, including this book.
I love how you put down, you know, the various chapters are episodes of artificial intelligence and things like that over the years.
Yeah, I think that's what makes this book different. First of all, it's heavily illustrated, so all of the entries are chronically ordered from ancient days up until 2019, but each has a full-color picture that goes with it to make it more interesting and keep it alive for the reader.
Well, this cover, by the way, was exquisite. What's that material? It feels like felt.
Oh, yes. That's a good. I don't know exactly how they manufactured it. It also has some pretty pictures on the insides of the covers, which I like. Things from movies, robots,
yeah.
History. Yeah.
Pretty dramatic. Let's take some calls. Final calls here. Let's go to Stephen in Union City, California. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead. Steve, you with us?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, can you hear me? I was falling asleep. Hello?
You were falling asleep?
Yeah.
Yeah, get a little closer to your phone.
I got a statement regarding my favorite AI thing from the 80s and 90s.
Sure.
That is the movie Short Circuit 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the 90s, the Furby. And then... you know, I have a doubt that 5G would be used to stream video and audio to Facebook servers and stuff where they would be offloading some AI processing for things like delivering ads by, you know, processing things that we see and hear, you know?
Well, I think they're going to go ahead with something like that. I think it's going to work. Have you looked at 5G at all, Cliff?
No, that's the high-speed... up-and-coming network that...
That some people think is dangerous.
Well, what more could we do with higher speed? I guess you could stream more content. What's the worry? I guess there's some privacy worries if the technology, you know, has some embedded, you know, spyware or something. But I think it's just faster and faster networks.
Well, that's true. Next up, we've got Joshua in Grass Valley, California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, brothers and sisters out there.
Good to have you with us.
Yes, so I feel about the hype of the coming AI, which seems inevitable, is that we perceive it to be, like, you know, antagonistic to us, the human race. But, like, what I always find, like, strange is that how no one has conceptualized, puts out the idea that much, although there are some instances where it is promoted in that way. As Tom, when I was speaking with him, he mentioned the movie Chappie. If anybody hasn't seen the movie Chappie, I recommend it highly. So, but I've had this thought for so long, which is that why wouldn't the AI love us? Not all of us, but especially those of us that created it and that helped to foster it. And that if it was that intelligent, wouldn't it almost like become like somewhat, if it became aware in some way, like jealous of us, but would really love us. It would completely love and embrace us.
Would AI know who made it and who created it, Cliff?
Well, if it became super intelligent, presumably it would be on par with us or even beyond us. So it would potentially know everything that it can know at its level of advancement. But that's a good comment from the listener. You know, we always think, oh, we're worried about AI Terminator takeovers, but they probably can become empathetic, and people think a possible use is in elder care, where someone, it's very expensive to have humans always round the clock with people who need help. Can they be helpful to older people to take care of themselves? And then the question is, should the AI disclose that it's an AI rather than something, you know, like a human and thinking and conscious? Or is it better to think that this thing is human because it makes the interaction, even if it's synthetic in some ways, makes it better for an older person because it has a warmth and an empathy.
Well, how will it show emotion? What will it take to get AI to that point?
Well, it could always simulate emotion even today with its tone of voice, if it's in a robot with its gestures, in the words it uses. But of course, that's simulated emotion. It would take a leap into becoming conscious to become actually emotional, and the line between that is, you know, it's very hard to know where that line is between something that appears to be conscious and is conscious, appears to be emotional and is emotional. That's a big philosophical discussion in itself.
Let's go to George in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, George, welcome to the program.
Morning, George. Hi, Cliff.
Hi.
I was wondering if you knew of any of the advanced military operations for AI. Now, here's what I do know about. In a dogfight, the pilot could kick in a program that does the maneuvers a lot faster than humankind could ever do it. You know, pulls heavy Gs, mm-hmm. blacks out the pilot, and even though he would survive because the computer is simulating all those operations. I understand they are building the Terminator right now. They have tanks that are being programmed. You know, like Uber, where the whole trip is planned. The tanks are being programmed that way as well. I was wondering if you knew any advanced military operations.
Any inside information on that, Cliff?
Well, I have a whole entry called Lethal Military Robots and Lethal Autonomous Weapons, which starts back in the Germans in 1942. They had an unmanned tank called Goliath that would carry explosives. And as the listener was saying, you know, if you had an aircraft, a robotic or AI one, could do maneuvers that would injure humans, but it wouldn't injure the person. So the question gets back to the ethics of it. Already the drones that we use in war, right, they're incredibly sophisticated, have all kinds of AI.
Oh, sure.
But currently there's a human in the loop. The human must press the button if it's about to shoot a missile and kill someone. The question is, should we ever get to the point where the AI makes the decision? And there's so many arguments. You know, you could argue against that. What if that got out of control? But one of the arguments for it is, what if it can be accurate and have reduced casualties and not make a mistake of a tired soldier who is actually pressing the button to attack? But it's a very interesting topic.
Let's go next to Monty in California. Welcome to the program. Monty, go ahead, sir.
Hi. Hope you can hear me, George.
Yeah, loud and clear.
Well, hello, George and Cliff. I'm a tech writer, and I'm not too worried about how AI will function. I think it will work very well the way we programmed it. What I'm more worried about is how we will connect with it, in a sense. And I have a story here, a short story. I was in a car wash in my Subaru, and it had collision avoidance, the software in it, and the blower came down to roll over my windshield, and the car would not allow me to move forward.
It thought it was a collision, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't know how to turn that off. So I sat in the car for 5 minutes experimenting with different things, trying to work around it. It was like a trapped feeling. When I got out afterward, I looked through the owner's manual. I found buried deep in the manual that there was a button you could push to turn it off if you were like at a railroad crossing and you were trapped between, you know, poles that could come down in front of you and back of you. Yeah. So, it's like, this made me think the AI works great, but I need to know how to use it.
That's right.
That's right. The concern always is giving too much decision making to the AI. And it sounds like we have the same car. And basically, this is the first car I've had where you had to go in and get a software update for the car. So they are becoming very complicated. And there's safety goodness, right? It can protect you in many ways. But then, as you're saying, if you turn over a lot of decision-making and you need to disable something, that is something that to be concerned about.
But I got to tell you, when technology fails, Cliff, this is going to be a disaster.
Right, and humans are turning over so much of their skills and decision-making to AI, like we were talking about earlier. At some point, we will become a little more brittle in the sense that we'll be able to do less. But on the whole, I think it's good. Right, in the old days, Homer, the Iliad and the Odyssey, that was done without writing. They just had an oral tradition where they'd speak it and memorize the whole thing. Today, we can't memorize huge books as well as they could back in the ancient days, but isn't it much better that we have books and the internet and we can look up everything at Wikipedia? Very useful. Of course, if the internet dies, then
we're a little more troubled.
Let's go to Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina on the wild card line. Barry, go ahead, sir.
Hello, George. I tell you what, I was talking to Tommy. I got a great opinion on whether or not I want to know when I'm going to die. But first, let me say, be careful of my Atlanta Braves whipping up on those Cardinals, buddy.
Hardly. We'll see.
Anyway, I know it. I'm thinking Braves is going to sweep, but I doubt that. But listen, George, I told Tommy and you and your guest, I would absolutely not want to know when I'm going to die because, George, if I knew I was going to die in 2025, May the 10th, at 10:30 a.m., you realize how scared and panicked and worried and trying to cram in everything you could for your last 90 seconds that I would be, I think I'd have a heart attack before that time came.
Well, you could, but at the same time, if AI told you how you're going to die or why you were going to die, you might be able to fix it.
You know what, Tommy said the same type of opinion, and you know what? You very well could be right. None of us know the answer because it won't happen in our lifetime.
I think if the question was turned a little bit and said, it was inevitable, you will die on this day, I certainly don't want to know, like, next week I'm going to die. That'd be very scary. But if it said, Cliff, you'll last till age 99 and let's say healthy, and then you will die. If it's that far in the future, I'd say, oh, maybe I'll do that. I'd take a little more risk. I could enjoy life. Don't worry about my, every day something could go wrong. But you're right. If it's a close-up date and it was inevitable, that would affect your psyche, and it might be too depressing.
I mean, if AI, let's say, became a predictor of the future and said, you are going to die on May 8th, 2027, when a paint bucket falls from a building and crushes your skull. Well, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go out that day.
Yeah, certainly if you could avoid it, then that's a whole different thing, right? You could change diet, you could avoid things. But if it was inevitable, then that's another question.
See, I don't think things are inevitable. I think we have the right to change. We have choices. And I think what AI could do is help us, augment us, and point out things. I mean, we've got AI now that does predictions of your death based on your lifestyle. But I think if you change your lifestyle, you're going to change that.
Right, and even in the area of medicine, AIs are already helping people, helping scientists design new drugs for health. They can take in all these kind of medical records and data and make the recommendations of the type you're interested in, to help you live longer.
I mean, they have medical tests right now that we take to prevent a potential problem. And if you go in and, let's look at Bernie Sanders for a moment. The guy had heart pains yesterday, went in and had a stent operation, had two stents put in his arteries. And what stents are, for people who might not know, they're like little springs that kind of open up your artery. They put them in your artery. They go through right through an artery in your leg, and they pop it right in through your artery in your heart, and it opens up that heart artery if it can. If not, then you have to have bypass surgery. But, if you take a test and it shows your arteries are clogged, that you were going to die in, let's say, 6 months because you didn't know that. But if you take the test and it shows that you can get this fixed, you might live another 10 or 20 years.
Certainly. And aren't you glad we live in modern times where they have stents to put in your blood vessels? That's why I'd be a little afraid to go back in time like we were talking about earlier. Would we go forward in time and back? Because you didn't have stents,
20 years ago, I think he would have died.
Bernie would have died.
Simple as that. Cliff, give out your website, if you would.
Hi, the best way people can reach me and learn about my books, and I have over 50 books. The latest one is on AI. My website is pickover.com.
Cliff, thanks again for being on the program. Great book. You did a great job, and I noticed it took you 4 more years to get back on the show. Let's not let that much time go by. Up next on Coast to Coast, special Hollywood Deaths, Dearly Departed podcast coming up. Mike Dorsey and Scott Michaels joins us. We will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.